our speaker, Maureen Wolfe. She is the Chief Executive Officer of Sharon Merrill Associates. And Sharon Merrill Associates is a nationally recognized investor relations advisory firm. Maureen is the past chairman and board member of the National Investor Relations Institute, also known as NIRI. She's been a NIRI fellow. She's been vice chairman of the NIRI IR Certification Committee and a member of the NIRI Senior IR Roundtable Steering Committee. Maureen is a frequent speaker on investor relations issues. She's developed speeches and participated in investor relation panel discussions at the New York Stock Exchange and the National Association of Corporate Directors. Her comments on investor relations have appeared in Bloomberg Magazine, Business Week, Financial Times, and Investor Business Daily. Prior to joining Sharon Merrill Associates, Maureen held positions in the investor relations and corporate communications department at Lotus Development Corporation.
Right. A million years ago.
Many years ago. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry, and thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about shareholder activism, which is what I've been asked to speak about. And we've put together a case here for everyone to take a peek at, which is kind of a combination of a few different activism situations that were out there. So I didn't want to put exactly one that you might be able to figure out which one it is. So, and shareholder activism is something that is has been growing over the years. I mean, it's ebbed and flowed. Many years ago, there was a lot of activism, but now it's really become its own industry. Shareholder activism, and in fact, some of these activists are now buying companies. So, it's really been changing over the years. I mean, the activists are taking a very active role in the companies. They are working very closely with the institutions. In fact, a lot of the big local institutions that are here in the Boston area, a lot of times will partner with the activist firms to actually go after the companies. And so you don't know who's really behind the activism. And you may think, oh, this is just a small hedge fund. I don't really have to pay attention to them. But they're being funded by a very large institution that is helping them do it, because the large institutions don't want to be known as doing activism because people don't want to work with them and they don't want to meet with them regularly. So a lot of different things are going on behind the scenes, and obviously there's a lot of different trends going on why there is so much activism. Obviously, executive compensation is a big issue. The area of corporate governance, that's typically the way that they go after a company, is they talk about the corporate governance. If there are a lot of people that's on the board that are friendly with the CEO, they've been on the board for a long time, which is in this case, where there's like a lot of companies out there where the board of directors has been on it's been the same board for more than 10 years, more than 20 years. There are people that are sleeping at a lot of the board meetings and are not really paying a lot of attention, and people see that. And then you become a prime candidate for, sometimes they go to the annual meetings, they look and see, you know, what the board members look like, are they paying attention, are they sleeping at the annual meeting, and as another way of going after different companies out there. So a lot of times they may start with the governance issues by looking at your board, it hasn't been refreshed recently, or looking at the fact that you have a staggered board still, and where not all your board members are being voted on an annual basis. So there's some different corporate governance, you know, triggers that are out there that kind of get people interested.
Maureen, can I ask a question?
Yes.
Is this issue confined to public companies? I'm not just thinking in my world. We work with a number of private equity-dominated companies, and often there are several private equity firms on the board.
That's right.
Sometimes they work collaboratively, and
sometimes they
don't.
That's right.
I'm just wondering if what you say is applicable to other kinds of companies other than public.
It's really public because it's buying into the shares of the company, unless they are able to get in through some type of private offering, where it's really an investor that's kind of trying to stir things up a bit. But it's primarily that we hear about in general is more in the public company world. So I don't know if anyone here has had any experience with activists at all on not with the companies that they've been on, no.
You're shaking your head, David?
Yes, one of the public companies that I represent had some, well, we had a proxy fight. Well, it didn't end up as a proxy fight. It was a threatened proxy fight, and there ended up being a settlement, you know, with some changes in the board of directors.
That's right. So that's become, you know, a lot more common, as David mentioned. I mean, in the past, several years ago, people were doing a lot more fighting and not settling with them. And now more and more companies are settling with the activists to avoid a proxy fight. Part of the reason is because the institutional shareholders don't like you spending all this money on fighting, you know, the activists, particularly if there's something that you might be able to change, or depends on what it is specifically that they're looking at. If they're looking at adding, because you have a lot of people that have been on the board for a long time, and they want to add, they think that you need some refreshment, you need some new board members, and they're looking for more diversity, that may be a way of settling that you're willing to put someone on the board. You could do it where it's, you know, you both agree that you'll agree about a certain board member, that you'll bring different board members in, they can make suggestions, you can ask your institutional shareholders to make suggestions, you don't necessarily have to put the activist specific person on your board. They now are getting much better at coming up with very good board candidates. And so when they put them up, it's very difficult for the institutions to vote against putting one of these board members on. They typically are putting on an industry expert, a financial expert, and then depending on what they believe, it's typically they try to put at least three up for election, and if they get two people on, because the studies have shown if they can get two of their people on, they can actually make a big difference on a board. One person getting on is much more difficult to do that. They still can be successful, and they'll make an argument that one person, they can have a big influence, but two is really key. So this case here, if you go through it, it's talking, you know, the example is kind of an industrial company that where the CEO has been there, originally was a family-owned company that went public. The CEO has been there for a very long time. The company has made some acquisitions over the years, which have not always turned out to be a positive situation or a growth vehicle for them. And the CEO has brought in someone to be a COO, hoping, you know, for succession planning. This COO ended up getting involved in buying into something that's kind of outside their specialty. Looking at this, you know, trying to come up with another growth path, which hasn't worked out very well, hasn't integrated very, very, very well. And what a lot of times has happened is that the CEO might be meeting with some shareholders that are communicating that they're not happy with where the company is going. If the company hasn't been growing, or the company is getting kind of poor, if you haven't been on public company boards, but public company boards have the proxy advisory firms out there like ISS, which some people call it ISIS, and Glass Lewis, that come up and kind of rate your company on your corporate governance profile. And a lot of times these companies may not give you a very good rating. They also are looking at your total shareholder return and see how that compares to your peer companies. And if you don't have a very good return, obviously that's another trigger for activists to go after you. In this particular case, the peer total shareholder return has been way below average for a number of years. So two activist hedge funds have been, were first meeting with the company, you know, individually, talking about the fact that they were unhappy with what was going on at the company. They were looking for, they're looking for change. They're looking to say, well, what are you going to be doing different? And they were talking to the company, particularly their CEO, primarily. Obviously, they were talking to their CFO a bit and their investor relations officer, but most of the meetings were with the CEO, and the CEO thought that he could do these meetings individually, so he didn't always bring a second person. And the
Maureen,
yes.
Let me suggest.
Yes.
Let the participants read the case.
Sure. Sure.
Look at the financials, and then when you've finished reading the case, raise your hand, and then you are going to be the chairman of the board.
Yes.
And this is the board.
Okay, that sounds good.
And then have a discussion about it.
Okay, that's great.
I love the names you've got.
I know.
The lady has made that's just priceless.
I wanted to have a little fun with it.
Your next chapter is books, right? Gecko can't fix, right?
I'm sorry?
Nothing Gordon Gecko can't fix, right?
No, exactly.
I don't know what I do on the board, but this would make a great movie.
What did you say, Larry?
I said, I don't know what I do on the board, but this would make a great movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think Danny DeVito would be millennials.
Changes need to be made.
But don't forget, you're on the board.
So Larry, are we the board of this company?
Well, I'll give them this, they definitely have diversity, you gotta give them that.
You are the board of this company.
It's the wrong diversity, but they know it.
So I gotta tell you a story, the board of my former company, there was one board member who said, hey, we absolutely have to have term limits for board members. It's no longer there. Not necessarily a good thing.
Well, that's a good thing, I probably should.
No, you should, but obviously they did not.
That's how he's was, so he's gone.
They terminated him.
Yeah, they terminated him.
And that was a public company?
Public company.
Oh, my gosh, oh, yeah.
I'll tell you which one.
It happens.
It has some striking similarities to this, so better be careful, it's all being taken. In terms of how long the board members have been there.
Mm-hmm, which is really typical, this is a very typical.
Yeah, it's probably less than 10 years.
I mean, obviously not with those names, but.
It's more about the composition of the board.
Right, that's right, exactly.
You know, I know it has nothing to do with this, but the thing that I like is the UK system, which is that you can keep, you have term limits of X length of time, and I can't remember if it's 10, 12, or 15 years, whatever it is, and you can keep the person on the board, but they can't count as an independent director.
Oh, that's interesting.
So they can't be on audit, they can't be on comp. So if you wanna use one of your precious few slots to have a non-independent director.
Right.
You know, but they're basically useless from a committee standpoint. So it's actually a nice way of being able to keep somebody if they're really productive.
Right.
It forces time.
Which really is needed. It's a hard conversation to have, though.
Who's read the case? Yeah.
Okay, so.
Can I start off?
Yes, please, Larry.
Yeah.
In the context of this case.
Yes.
You were the president, you were the CEO, right?
I'm the CEO? Oh, that's too bad.
I'd rather be the chair.
But I am the chair and CEO.
The chair is Mr. Funk, right?
Yes, exactly, I am Mr. Funk.
So my question to the board is, with all due respect to Mr. Funk.
Yes.
Is Mr. Funk the right person to chair this?
Discussion.
This discussion, should we have a lead director for this meeting?
Oh, because I've already told you that I don't wanna spend a lot of time talking about it, right? So I'm looking for you to give me ideas, so.
I have an idea.
Yes.
My idea, I guess it's a question. How could you have kept us in the dark for 4 months? That's outrageous. And that might move to appointing someone else.
Are you tendering your resignation today, or is that gonna happen tomorrow?
I mean, how can he, I mean, it's the exact question I was thinking, like, where's his fiduciary responsibility to be able to talk to the board about this, to say whether he's pro or con against it, at least he has to, I would think, bring it up.
You would think so.
Yeah, but you look at the dynamics of the board.
As a high-quality board.
And, you know, it's his company, and he'll do what he wants, and he'll stack the deck.
I would hope that the outside corporate counsel would remind all the directors that their duty is to the shareholders and not to the CEO.
Right.
I don't know why he's on board.
Did you look at the name of the guy who's the outside counsel? That sort of buys me the quality of the outside counsel. Sorry. I don't know if you're trying to do that.
No, well, particularly, you know, sometimes where people do put their outside counsel on the board. It happens. We have clients that have that.
It's pretty rare.
Yes, no, it is, yeah.
Especially since, as Larry mentioned, D&O insurance. I mean, you try and get D&O insurance to cover a client where a partner's on the board.
Right.
So they'll exclude it.
They've alluded to the press release. What's in the press release? Like, what is it that they're going to say in a week or?
Yeah. When you look at the P&L of financial condition of the company, it's.
Yeah, what's the white?
You can point to a few things, but it's not like, it doesn't look.
It's terrible, right? But it's not.
Yeah, it's not terrible.
So here's CEO. Are we in the board meeting?
Yes, we are. Go ahead, Ellen.
I need to raise my hand. So dear Mr. Falk.
Yes.
What's your first name again?
Fred.
Fred.
Fred. Fred, I've had this information for 4 months. At least some of us aren't very happy about it. The company has not been doing very well, and we've talked about this in the board meeting many times. The fact that it hasn't been growing, it's, you know, we're sort of, if you look at the numbers, we're sort of flat in terms of revenue, flat, you know, in terms of EPS. I mean, we're doing okay, but there's nothing to get very excited about here, and shareholders these days want an improvement in returns, and we've been talking about this here at the board. So these shareholders, one of the things that I think we need to do immediately is figure out what skill set we need on our board right now and for the next 3 years in order to re-energize. And maybe these people have good outside independent folks who are not hired by them who they might want to recommend to be considered, because we've got to have a board that mirrors what we need as a company. And by the way, you should tender your resignation for not having told the company in 4 months about this. But
my job is to meet with shareholders, and that's part of my job as CEO, and I go out there and I hear all kinds of things from shareholders when I'm out there. Some are happy, some are not happy. So this, you know, it's not unusual for me to be hearing from some shareholders that they're not happy with what it is that we're doing. But I think it's going to be, I really believe that things are going to change, that things are going to get better. I think next year we have some things in place and things will improve next year.
What will be in the white paper that will be in the press release? What are we going up against? What is their argument or their point of contention? You say you speak with shareholders all the time and some are happy, some are not. They're clearly not. So what is it that they're going to argue for and why?
So I should probably share the white paper with you. Obviously, that would be something that would have to happen. So a white paper is typically done by, particularly a lot of these hedge funds, they have a whole financial analysis group that's internal to them, and they evaluate every single aspect of the company. They've pulled apart our income statement, our balance sheet. They've talked to our customers, our distributors. They've even talked to some of our employees, and they've come back and they've put together a plan of why they don't believe that this board and myself are very good at running this company, and they have some suggestions for things that we might want to try. They are suggesting that we divest, you know, certain parts of the business. They are suggesting that there are other parts of the business that they think we should try to do some acquisitions in as well. And they have a 7-point plan, improvement plan for us that they think we should be implementing.
And you're in full agreement with this 7-point plan?
No, I don't think so. I think what we're doing, I think, is the right way to go. And I think next year things are going to improve.
But I think we need to sit and listen to them, and we need to hear directly from them what their points are. Maybe we get a few of the independent directors to listen to them, or maybe they come to the full board and we all listen. Very unusual, and I'm not sure I'd want to do that. But we need an independent group from the board who will listen to specifically to their ideas. And if they have some specific people who they are recommending who would be independent directors, we need to understand what the qualifications of those people are and why they think that would be helpful to us. So I think we need to keep an open mind here, and I think we need to hear it out and listen to it in detail and then come back as a board and talk about it.
And I think we've been derelict in a lot of ways in that we don't have anybody new to put on the board, and the newest one of us here has been here for 9 years, and maybe we need to wake up and put together a slate of candidates, or even put together a nominating governance committee. I don't know that we obviously don't have one. No, we don't, obviously, because they wouldn't bring, they didn't bring anybody forward.
Yes, you would have a nominating and governance committee, because it's a requirement, so you have to.
They didn't do anything.
Well, but they not, may not have met.
Well, they may have met, but they didn't come up with anybody.
What percentage of activists own the company?
So right now, they own 5% of the company.
Well, indirectly, when they go up to 9, just based on some.
That's right, based on some derivatives, they can go up to 9%.
So, I mean, from that perspective, they're not an insignificant shareholder.
But they're also not significant.
No, they're not, but I would think at that level, the board had a right to hear a proposal from them. It's not like this is just some guy off the street coming up to you as the CEO saying, gee, I looked at your company and I recommend this. This is shareholders who have a decent amount of interest, and I think there was a fiduciary obligation to present that.
Mm-hmm. Well, they claim that they've met with our top 15 shareholders and that they do have some of our other shareholders that are similar liking
and
to that.
And if you added their percentage of ownership over the
I mean, we would probably be, there's a good possibility that we would lose against them if there was a proxy fight. But right now, there's not a proxy fight. Right now, they're asking us, they've given us this white paper, want us to review it. That's what the board wants to do. And then they want us to come up with next steps. What next steps, as Ellen was suggesting, do we want to put together a smaller subsection of the board as a committee to kind of review their white paper? The problem that we have is that they want to go out with the white paper next week if they don't get a response from us.
So I think we need to make is the board has met. We want to hear from them directly. We want to understand in detail their white paper and what they're suggesting, and then give it due consideration. And so that we can understand directly, because otherwise it's hard to give them a real detailed response when, one, we haven't seen the white paper, and two, we haven't heard the thoughts behind it. So I would immediately suggest that we either the full board or an independent subgroup meet with them to listen to them to give some real detailed thought about what their ideas are. We've had a lot of conversations in the boardroom that things aren't growing, so you never know. There could be a couple good ideas in there.
And to follow up on that, I think if we tell them we've appointed a committee, not including you, Mr. Funk, I think that sends a message that, the lack of interest in the last 4 months of your meeting with them may change, and they might delay that white paper for a week or two while a select committee meets with them. And I'd also like to point out that this is pretty heavily institutional. It looks like
it
about
is.
50% or more institutional, and they're not loyalists to you. They're going to vote based on what they think is best for the growth of the company in the future. And if we can't rationally understand that 7-point plan and have better arguments than their arguments, and we're going to lose the vote.
So in the spirit of being fair and balanced, then maybe we should parallel path, and I'd love to hear your senior level response to the white paper. What do you feel
Absolutely.
We should do with specificity in order to get this back on track and in a growth orientation?
Well, I think we should try to fight it. I'm not sure that everyone should meet with them, right offhand. I think we probably should hire we should bring in a lawyer that specializes in this kind of situation, because it's not typically your regular corporate attorney that would be helping out in this situation. We might want to also bring in a communications firm, a proxy advisory firm, so that they can look at our shareholder base and see who do they think would vote with someone on the outside making a recommendation versus what we have.
Why is that your recommendation? I don't know what
I'm
you're
actually curious to hear what they're going to say, because you look at our P&L and our operating expenses, they've grown disproportionately over the last 3 or 4 years. So we really do want to get the company back on the right track, and we should be willing to listen to another viewpoint.
I would say there are three parallel paths, right? One is, One is clearly to understand what's in the white paper and meet with these folks.
So who is going to meet with them, though?
We can make it, well, you can't be there because you've held us in abeyance for 4 months, so that would not be a correct approach. So you need either all the outside directors or a subset of the outside directors, whatever the board wants to appoint. Second, I agree with Brian. You know, we need to hear from you, the CEO, specifically. You know, you keep telling us we're going to get back to growth. You haven't really given us differences or changes you're making. It's always more the same. And third, I do agree we should have discussions with outside counsel communications, because we need to make sure that we think about what is needed in a case like this, because as we're having these conversations, we may need to communicate more or less, and so we should understand those requirements also. So it's really three paths. My recommendation to the board.
I second.
I just said I'm going to make leave my mouth out of it.
Yes,
a second.
That's good.
And
are you part of the group?
I'll make leave I'm not part of the board for just 1 minute and just say, I'm looking at this. Who's going to meet with this and be able to be qualified to even make an assessment?
Yeah, that is a problem.
Well, a school teacher, clearly.
Right. I couldn't find too many outside directors as I read through.
Even if they were to meet with them, I'm not even sure.
There's a high-tech CEO in here.
There's
one person
who I thought potentially, and maybe the outside lawyer who could be best friends with. But so I don't even know who's qualified to even meet with with these activists to be able to.
But I think Dylan.
Well, listen. Well, keep
him outside.
Keep in mind, you've been on the board with each other now for a minimum of 11 years. So you've been sitting through these board meetings with me and my team as we present our plan to you. And now, you know, looking at what
you're
saying.
You're saying we're equally as inept.
Right. We suck as directors, even if you suck as a CEO.
I'm almost afraid to ask this question.
Yes.
But has Institutional Shareholder Services evaluated this board?
Yeah, so
what is our rating? What is our ISS rating?
So our rating hasn't been that great, but it's been kind of middle of the road. We get like a 5 on a 1 to 10 scale.
Middle of the road.
That's pretty good from what I see. Was that another college roommate?
middle of the road, that's pretty good.
We buy consulting services from ISS and that helps.
That's right,
that's
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
That's what they did.
So,
yes, please.
So this board, have they...
You're part of the
when the going gets rough, the rough gets going, right?
Stepping out of the role for a minute, get a little younger. So does the board have any analysis from the past on these acquisitions? So there have been an acquisition from 1999, 2002, and then
that's
one.
Right.
Everybody's been a
Is there any analysis on these acquisitions actually accretive to actual sales growth? What's actually happened operationally? Is there any data on that?
Yeah, so you would be getting updates from the management team comes in every quarter and presents to the board. And you've all been sitting through all those meetings.
We've been asleep
every quarter.
We're not going to sleep with the switch.
So it's hard to manage.
And I really thought, we really thought, our new COO who's going to be taking over for me, because I'm looking to retire very soon. And he bought this last company that, I know it took a while to convince all of you, but we really thought getting into the wine business was really going to be an extension to our canning business.
Because it seems very convenient that the financials have the cost of goods for all the different operating divisions, but not the sales breakdown.
Right. We're hiding that. So you would have to be thinking a bit about the response, who is going to make the response. And well, I know you don't want me there as the CEO, but typically someone from the management team would be there meeting
so
with
I think
the
real
investors.
Estate agent is the top person.
The school teacher.
I think one other thing that should be discussed at the board meeting is director resignations, because any sort of a settlement with these people will involve some director resignations. And there may be people that are ready to resign.
Oh, I am.
And
all right, so we're, so all of you directors are getting paid $200,000 a year.
Forget it. So, I'm sticking it out.
So,
I'm with you.
I'm asking, who would want to resign? If we were going to add new board members, who would like to volunteer to give up their salary?
I'd like to review our insurance policy before.
Actually, what does our bylaw say in terms of the number of directors we can have?
We're at 9, and that's how many we're allowed to have is 9. We would have to change our bylaws if we were going to add directors.
Yeah, they're not going to want to add 3 to your 9.
$200,000 a person, no.
No, they might want to cut the board to 7 and have 3 of them.
Right.
But in the one I was involved in, we didn't have director resignations in advance of the meeting. We had people say, yeah, I'm ready to. They weren't paid, they probably paid $20,000 a year, so it was easier. And, you know,
is public company board, so.
No, this was a public company board. It was.
That's $20,000?
It was a buyout.
Well, I want to be here if you're making $200 a pop.
I'd say I'm between the two, closer to the 200 than the 20.
Well, this was a few years, this might have been 10 years ago, and it was a non-profitable biotech.
So we would have to think about if you want, you know, someone from the management team as well. Well, someone's going to have to reach out. Am I reaching out to them to set up a meeting? Who is it? The lead director?
I go back to my original idea, and that is we need to appoint a lead director.
Yeah.
Because you are the, you can't represent the board in this.
But I am the chairman.
Yeah, that's why we need a lead director.
But this is a lead independent director.
Mm-hmm. But it has to be somebody who is truly independent.
That's made a real estate guy. Well, to that end, if we go down Ellen's parallel path with 3 items, one was to seek outside counsel, maybe through that.
Counsel and communication, so we can educate ourselves. Yeah,
so maybe we identify somebody there that could be independent, much like this outside corporate counsel. Do we cheat? Yeah.
But it sounds like you don't really have all that much time.
Right. It's Friday. Yeah. It's Friday night.
Yeah,
and they're going to go out with this next week.
I have no idea what's in this white paper. And I think the mea culpa is to say, we do want to listen to you. Please come in. We do want to
that's what we said.
Hear, where, which is all new information. So up to this point, today, I'm hearing it for the very first time. There's going to be a press release of a white paper, which we've known about for 4 months. So our response is, oh, definitely we want to sit and hear your proposal. And that should buy us time and delay this from being released to the press.
Yeah, so we need our independent director, lead independent director, to call them after this board meeting.
Without a management team member?
You can have somebody on the call with, you know, your IR person can be on the call with the lead independent director, but the lead independent director is in charge of the call, saying directly that the board has been apprised of the situation, does not know what's in the white paper, want to hear the analysis, and are very interested in having a direct understanding of what's in the white paper, and we're willing to meet again on Monday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, whenever you're ready. We will make
ourselves. In the spirit of good faith, we would ask that you not release that because we are hearing it for the first time. We do want to sit down and have a conversation.
And understand.
So how could you?
What would be their motivation? They gave it an ultimatum, so they can say, you know what?
No,
because.
Sure they can.
You had it for 4 months, and that you guys.
No. This independent director on the call who's going to lead it is going to tell them. I just heard about this.
I know, but
6 hours ago. I didn't know.
What do they
have? More of an indictment on the chairman of the CEO.
But what do they have? What do they have to gain by saying?
They have the gain to work with the board.
Yeah.
Negotiated settlement.
But they're just doing a they're just doing a white paper out there.
But if they really care about the company, if there really is a serious interest, which some of them do care, just want to get the company moving again, and so they want the best way, because that in their best interest, why not wait a week, sit down with the directors, figure out if the directors are credible, and will take their ideas seriously, and maybe even consider some change up.
Could I exert my role here? We've got 10 minutes left to 6 o'clock. I would like to hear Maureen comment on the case and comment on our discussion about the case.
No, I think they're great ideas that you came up with. You have to keep in mind, you have to be very careful on what you would want to say as far as saying that you didn't know anything about it, because you've been sitting here, you know, you've been at every quarterly board meeting, and you've been hearing what's going on. The fact that you may not have heard specifically that this white paper was given, but if you were bringing if your CFO was in here regularly and you had your IRO at least in once a year, and usually investor relations is giving you a package every quarter which talks about who we met with and some feedback. And if you haven't been getting that, then you have been kind of missing the boat and not really looking for what are the shareholders really saying. So that should be something that you have been getting regularly. But if you didn't see the white paper, right, you'd want to look at the white paper. But you have to really give some thought on calling them up and all of a sudden being like, oh, we don't know anything about it, and all because you've been sitting here all this time.
Reference was to the white paper and to their proposal, not knowing about it, not having any visibility to it. That is complete and utter new information to me. I have sat on the board. I have paid attention, and in support of you, I think we're okay. We're probably not as great as we should be, but we're kind of okay. But I have an open perspective, and I want to hear what they have to say.
That's right. So he already has the white paper. I already have the white paper if I'm right. Still the CEO. I have it, so that's something that I would be photocopying or giving out to everyone, so you would be able to see the 7-point plan that they've come up with. And then, as Ellen was suggesting, it's good to put a smaller group. It's too many people. Plus, you wouldn't, because there has to be steps that you have to go through, and you have to be giving them more and more. So you don't want to start off with a ton of the whole board, because you're kind of already telling them, like, we're done. Like, you're definitely going to be giving them all 3 seats and everything they want, because you're all freaking out about it. So you're going to have to assign, like, the lead director and maybe another director and someone from the management team, whether it might be the CFO that goes with you, or it could be the inside general counsel might go with you. It could be investor relations, depending on, again, how hot senior that particular person is as well. But setting up a meeting, either going, they're probably in New York, as most of these hedge funds are in New York, and you probably would either be going to New York and meeting with them, and you would be wanting to be in listen mode. You're not going to come up with anything like, we did this, we didn't know this. You are not giving them any information, because anything that you give them, they are going to use against you in that news release. We met with the board. They didn't even know what was going on. This board's been sleeping. So you have to be very careful in everything that you say. So you're really going out on a listening tour. You want to hear what they have to say, and it's something you're going to go back to the full board with, because you don't want to agree to anything that they're saying. You've looked at this, but if you've gone through their plan, you're going to have some questions. And there may be things that you might have already tried that are in their plan. You know, they don't know what you've already discussed, what has been, you know, that the company has tried already. So you kind of want to go through the plan and then ask them more questions on how this would work and what are you thinking about this area. And then those two people and the CFO or whoever went out with you would come back and have a full board meeting where you would discuss it and then see what the next steps would be. And you would be letting them know, you know, the next step, we'll get back to you in another week. We're going to have a board meeting about it. But you really have to be very careful in everything that you say.
So how do you balance the not knowing and kind of saying, you can't say you don't know, but then by the same token, if you kind of say you knew, I think they'd be saying, why am I going to pay attention to you now? So how do you balance?
It's hard to be saying you're not knowing if you've been sitting at all these board meetings. You know what's been going
on.
Knowing.
My only statement towards not knowing is about this white paper. That's
right.
It, beginning,
that's
middle,
right.
And end.
That's
the only thing I didn't know about.
Right.
I'm open
right.
and willing to listen. And as we go back to our three-point plan, part of that is to seek outside council representation, et cetera, to guide us through this activist process, because maybe that's new to many of us.
That's right.
And to your point, say nothing, be in listening mode, all of that will come forward through an outside consultant mm-hmm. that's going to walk us through the process.
That's right. Any other questions? Any other?
So how did the story end?
Yeah, what happened in the activist case?
The activist did get all three seats on the board.
The activist did what?
They got all three seats, and you know, there were director resignations.
Did they hold off issuing the white paper?
They did hold off for it for a while, but eventually the white paper did go out.
So the board members that were added, were they truly independent or were they from the activists?
They were from the activists. They were from the activist organization. They put two people on that, you know, were more independent, and the activists went on the board as well.
Yeah.
The company is no longer around, though.
Oh.
The company is gone.
I wish I could say this is
yes.
a very creative fiction. But I had a client that was very similar to this.
Mm-hmm.
It was a public company, and there was a chairman of the Nominating Governance Committee who was an outside lawyer, and he hired us to do a search for three external directors who were competent. We brought them in, and then within 3 or 4 years later, they all resigned, and they were all replaced by, you know, the retired teacher and the
mm-hmm.
my investor and my personal attorney. It was just like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for those of you who are not in this sphere, this is actually not, this does happen.
No, it's not fiction.
So when they sold, they got a good return?
Yes, they got a pretty decent return. The CEO was no longer there either.
Yeah.
I mean, he obviously had to go as well. And so did the CFO go. So, but they brought in a different management team.
Did the chief operating officer?
No, the chief operating officer didn't make it either. Really, they pretty much cleaned house
yeah.
with the whole management team.
I mentioned the ISS ratings. How many of you are not familiar with ISS? Okay. It's very easy to find. You go to Yahoo Finance, and then and just do Yahoo space finance space name of company, and then look at the profile. And the ISS rating is on the lower right-hand side of the screen. And it's from 1 to 9, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And the lower the number,
the
better.
The lower the better.
The higher the number, the worse. And it breaks it down. I would personally not believe that this company would be in the middle of the range.
Yeah. But, they were getting between a 5 and a 6, yes.
Yeah.
They were? Really?
What's the criteria, I guess? Who does the rating, or how independent?
It's all done through the, from the Form 9.
From the proxy.
To the 10K.
Right, from the proxy and the 10K. They do an analysis of that, but they have certain points, you know, areas that they're specifically looking at. And there's kind of a formula which keeps changing every year, but it depends on a lot of different, they're obviously, you know, they're looking at the independence of the board, but they're also looking at the refreshment. They're looking at what different bylaws that you have, you know, if you, as we talked about before, whether you have a staggered board or you're electing every year, if you have plurality, you know, what kind of voting structure do you have? Are you incorporated in Delaware or somewhere else? You know, do you have any defense mechanism in place? Can you call a special meeting? They have like all different factors, and then you're rated based on what you have there.
And it does seem like if you pay them to consult, that your rating is improved.
Yeah. So there's a lot of controversy over
yeah.
that. Yes. No, there is a lot of controversy over it. But the a lot of the institutions, particularly if you're at a small company, this is a small company. If you're at a small company. You know, it's much better, unfortunately, to work with ISS or you know, one of the firms out there. If you're going to put a different proposal, like a stock option plan in place or over your compensation plan, because they're the areas that they are dinging you on. So it's good to really make sure that you work with them and know what their parameters are. And they come out with a press release every year and talk about what areas they're looking at. So you have to make sure that you stay current with what changes that they're implementing. But it's ISS and it's Glass Lewis, and then there's Egan Jones. So there's other ones out there, and the institutional investors, they get all those reports. And when you're a small company, a lot of times the institutional investors are not even going to talk to you or even bother looking at your proxy. They're just going to do whatever ISS or Glass Lewis is advising them to do. So if they're voting against you for a certain reason, like if they decide they're voting against the board, the nominating committee, depending on who's up for election, you know, for a lot of times for these compensation issues, then they're voting against anyone that's on the comp committee, then the institutions will just vote that way. And that's it. So that's why you have to pay a lot of attention to them, because they do have an influence on what the institutional voting is.
So. You know, this also reminds me of we had a program, I think, maybe 2 years ago. I think you were there, Alan. It was somebody from Harvard Business School. He'd been at McKinsey. And the topic of the conversation was the board's role in reviewing acquisition decisions.
Right.
And that one of the things we were saying at the time is that in the U.S. military, every time that there's a firefight, the team then has an after-action review to review what actually happened. And you would think that if a CEO goes to a board and say, I think we should buy this company, and it's going to give us this, 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 maybe 3 years after the deal is done, the board might review that and say, did that actually happen? The speaker said, actually, it's very rare that boards do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a problem.
I think it's happening more. It may not be that formal, but I think it is happening more. It just I'm thinking of all the boardrooms I've been sitting in the last few years, and at least people are talking about it in terms of when we look at an acquisition, what are the metrics we're going to measure in the aftermath. So I don't know that it's perfect. I don't know that it's a huge percent, but I think we're going in the right direction at least on that.
Yeah, I think that's where management, before we do the deal, because I led mergers and acquisitions at Kimberly Clark for healthcare. And anytime I would put forward, hey, we want to go buy X, here was our business plan. Meaning, here's the synergies, you know, we're going to get rid of the CEO, the CFO, we're going to flip manufacturing, we're going to reduce our COGS, we're going to sell more because of X, Y, and Z. And it's interesting because Kimberly Clark was extremely tight on financials. And if I brought anything forward that was quote-unquote soft, like, oh, I'm going to get sales synergies, I mean, it was laughed at. They just don't even mention it because you're getting nothing for that. Mm-hmm. So it was very tight in terms of, we're going to close this manufacturing facility because that was within our control. It was part of our plan. So we would present it and get the buy-in, say, that's it. Now we're going to hold you accountable through your compensation. So as the general manager or the business leader, these are the things you must execute. So your compensation is going to be directly tied. And then we are going to measure it along the way. So that would surface at the board level, but only as a presentation. It wouldn't be a full post-mortem or anything. Certainly, that was definitely well thought of before we would move forward and execute on it.
I need to mention it's a little after it's 6 o'clock, and this is the time that we stop. So I'd like to thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry.
Yeah, it's a soft stop for anybody who wants to stay and continue to talk with Maureen. Please continue to stay, and those of you who need to leave, feel free to leave. Thank you. Marianne and I want to wish you a very happy Thanksgiving and holiday season, and we look forward to seeing you in 2017.
Thank you. Same to you. Thank you.
Good case, though.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I got you all.